Right now, time to welcome in David Tarachuk. It's time for The Media Beat. David has his own terrific website called themediabeat.us. That is its location. David also is a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief, and we're lucky enough to have him join us with his commentary on Friday mornings. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. Happy September to you, Marshall. I'm glad to be reporting in again, though this week it's for the last time. Beaming in from Maine. I'll soon be back in my regular base of the media capital of the world, New York City. But I'm glad today, as always, to be reviewing things with that diligent searcher after truth, Marshall Wiles.
Well, you know, I was going to start off with Joe Biden today, but I can't because I was listening to the BBC and watching the BBC this morning. And just the most horrible video and thing happened. Thank God it turned out all right. Argentina's vice president avoided assassination simply by the fact that a gun jammed that was aimed at her. And there's a BBC has a picture of this gun pointed right at her, and it jammed. And it is a frightening picture, but unfortunately, in today's times, it is a sign of the times.
More than its share of assassinations and assassination attempts of our top leaders. But yeah, there's something about the febrile atmosphere of politics just about everywhere right now. Perhaps not in Scandinavia, but then that's a dangerous thing to say. Single out somewhere and you know, very likely we'll find very soon that you know, such places are not immune. I mean, Olaf Palme, the Swedish prime minister, for instance, was assassinated. So no one is immune. No society, no political setup is immune to this. But yeah, it's a very, very dramatically captured as a piece of on-the-spot journalism in excuse me, in Argentina. It's a remarkable piece of reportage. It's a horrific event, and as you say, very narrowly escaped the most appalling outcome.
Well, we'll now turn to something that was very interesting that happened last night. Joe Biden. Not that the fact that he gave a presidential address, not for the fact that he gave a presidential address on talking about the possible loss of the U.S. democracy, but the amazing number of times Donald Trump was mentioned and how the president really split hairs, and I think he did it successfully, by talking about MAGA Republicans, not Republicans in general, and also really talking more about Donald Trump than Trump's supporters. I think it's a speech that had to be given. I mean, a lot of network people said that it was a political speech, but you're coming off a presidency where Donald Trump was always on TV. He was the mainstay, the headliner for all the networks. And you know what? I think this was a speech that was well needed, to be quite honest with you.
Well, yeah, the president's presidential address to the nation, which is how it was promoted in advance by the White House itself, and most journalists followed suit and used that sort of terminology. But it was, in fact, a stump speech in a vital swing state for this fall's midterm elections, the swing state, of course, being Pennsylvania. And, yeah, he's been moving towards it. I mean, he's concentrating on. Excuse me, I keep getting this frog in my throat, but it will go eventually. He's been making a particular point of addressing Pennsylvania. He was there 3 days ago, centering on guns and crime in his speech then at Wilkes University, and now he went home to the White House last night after the democracy is at risk speech. He'll be back in the Keystone State again on Labor Day for another speech at a Labor Day parade in Pittsburgh. But he's also taking another Labor Day event in Milwaukee, which, of course, is in another vital swing state, Wisconsin. There's no doubt, Marshall, we're in a midterms season now, without a doubt. But yes, see, he mentioned Trump by name, and you know, we normally are very used to his customary usage of the term "the former guy." But yeah, Trump's name came up three times, and he was drawing this distinction between MAGA Republicans led by Trump. He made no, there was no qualification about that. No reservation. These are Trump supporters he was attempting to stigmatize and to separate from mainstream Republicans, who he said again and again that he was very used to working with when, you know, he was previously vice president, and even more when he was in the U.S. Senate himself. But now we're dealing with something very different and something else, which is critically an anti-extremist speech it was cased as, democracy being at risk, in his terms. Press reaction was pretty much a shared sense that Joe Biden had returned to what many believe was the theme that won him his own successful election last time in 2020, the theme that he's in a fight. I mean, his terminology for it then, he was fighting for the very soul of America. And the game plan is reckoned to be that, well, it worked for him then. It could also work for Democratic House and Senate candidates 2 months from now. And, of course, you know, it's the beginning of his 2024 run, if, in fact, he makes one. But this was definitely, without a scintilla of a doubt, allowable anymore. A matter of politics rating the game. This is us and them, in a way that certainly for much of the first year of his administration, he made a lot of effort, and a good faith effort, it did appear, to reach out to the other side and to make some kind of non-partisan progress, and there has been that too. I mean, don't forget that he has managed to get through Congress very substantial, huge, in fact, pieces of legislation, sometimes without the Republicans, but sometimes with the cooperation of some of the Republican members in the Congress, and even sometimes the Senate. But now the gloves are off, as it were, Labor Day traditionally marks the beginning of election season in a midterm year, and sure enough, this is all politics now. But politics with a focus that says we're witnessing a fight for the principles of American democracy themselves.
It's pretty interesting because I don't think he's going to need to do this as much because it does show, and there's only been a couple of instances, but that these special elections where here in New York State, Mark Molinaro, extremely popular politician, lost in what they consider a swing district now because of the redistricting. Mark Molinaro is very, very, very popular, and he lost. He'll be going up against the same person in the election cycle. And in Maine, a Democrat won in their two-tier voting system, leading Sarah Palin in the first tier, and also garnering more of the votes in the second tier. Those are two warning bells that go off, and yet the president keeps making comments that I think puts the people running for Senate and the House at risk. Like he was saying yesterday, he is seriously considering January 6th pardons if he runs and wins in 2024. These are very hard statements for candidates to get behind.
Oh, sure. the granularity of likely presidential positions is making a commitment like that so out there. Is hard for anybody to get behind. Again, you know, there's a febrile quality to politics that it's like it is kind of feverish, and it makes you well, it makes many a dispassionate observer, and I try to be that, as journalists ought to. It's hard not to get the impression that the democracy itself is in question, for sure. Whether it's at great danger and great risk is for the electorate as a whole to decide, of course. But pitching it in those terms, heightening the temperature, raising the stakes, in this case, the almost moral stakes. I think for real hardcore believers in democracy, and in American style democracy in particular, are going to see it as a very high stakes game indeed.
David, you were in the middle of a conversation when the phone dropped out.
I don't know at which point you left. I was talking about how freewheel, feverish indeed, our politics have gotten. But it's a high stakes game, and in Pennsylvania last night, in Philadelphia, in fact, outside Independence Hall, no less, the president was turning up the volume and raising the stakes to the very very survival of American democracy. So we're in for a very high temperature campaign from now on, with midterms and then for the next presidential election.
I want to move on to a story that really focuses in with what is happening with weather conditions for the first time in the century. Pardon me, in the first time in recorded history where they've been taking records, no Atlantic hurricanes have approached. You have what's going on with the weather in California, and a third of Pakistan, listen to this, a third of Pakistan is underwater. And Pakistan, the people there have enough problems, but this is a huge humanitarian story.
Of course, yeah, and Pakistan is now getting international help. But Pakistan has traditionally been one of those very proud nations, which, although it's in desperate need on many, many levels, it tends to decline outside aid. This has got something to do with it. It is by its very definition a theocratic state. It identifies itself as a Muslim republic, and Muslim aid agencies have traditionally been to the fore when it comes to helping out Pakistan when it gets into humanitarian crises, which pretty often. Actually, considering their place in the world and their baseline poverty from the beginning, makes them very vulnerable, or makes very large sections of large swaths of their population very vulnerable. And this time around, too, Islamic aid agencies are in the forefront of helping them out. But the scale of the need is vast, as you say. It's extraordinary to consider that a third of the country is now underwater. It's a place that I've reported on, and way back in history, when it had another branch of its identity on the other side of that huge peninsula, if you like, the subcontinent, the Indian subcontinent, represents, sticking it down into the Indian Ocean. There was an eastern branch of Pakistan called East Pakistan, which of course is now in Bangladesh, having split off in a very ugly war, ugly in the sense that Pakistan itself essentially invaded its own eastern province and put down a likely rebellion. The beginnings of a rebellion, anyway, in a very vicious and horrible way. And that war resulted in the independence of Bangladesh. But both halves, that's not half and half, it was somewhat imbalanced, but both Pakistan proper now and West Pakistan then, and what was then East Pakistan, both suffered enormously from bad weather events, but nothing like what we are seeing now. I'm talking about the 1970s, and now in the 2020s, we have climate change happening before our very eyes. Until now, much of the climate change talk and the warming of the planet that was being discussed was cast in the terms of futurology. And it was futurists who were making a big case about it. But now, as you look around the world and list all those terrible weather events that you're referencing, Marshall, we'll see that, yes, climate change is here and now. And the notion that there could still be deniers, climate change denial, can still even exist in the face of all this evidence of extreme weather of all kinds, which is all associated, in vast majority of cases anyway, is directly associated with the rising the rising temperature of the planet. We've got a situation which it's too late to talk about. How are we going to head this off? We haven't headed it off. It's here with us now, and we have to adapt to it, and of course we have to ratchet back very fast the carbon emissions which are at the root of causing it in the first place.
Something that we have to point out, and the longest sentence yet handed out in the January 6th trials that is taking place, an ex-New York Police Department police officer got 10 years. The government was looking for 17, but his sentence at 10 years is, I think, 3 years longer than any other sentence that has been handed out as up to date.
Yeah, I was talking about the high stakes that were being raised in our election season, which it undoubtedly is now. There's no doubt about it. We're in midterm season, but one of the examples, if you like, of the raised temperature is the wreaking out of consequences, if you like, from January 6th, and the fact that you were mentioning that there is talk in the air of a presidential pardon if Trump were ever to get back in 2024 for the people who took part in the attack on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. And yes, the fact that now sentencing of such severity, I'm not going to say that it was extreme, but it was certainly decisive, you now have, I don't think it could be clearer, that we have a felon here, part of the invasion of the Capitol, there's something particularly galling about a veteran police officer, and I speak as a New Yorker here, a veteran NYPD officer attacking other police officers at the Capitol and found guilty in that attack and given this hefty sentence. I think this kind of thing will probably add heft to the terms of the argument that the president was making in front of Independence Hall. That yes, our democracy is very much the very principles of our democracy, peaceful transition of power from one party to another, and an acceptance by people of peaceful resolution of their differences. Ex-cops beating cops on Capitol Hill itself is just no is evidence of no trust any longer for many people in the democratic process. It's no exaggeration to extrapolate from this case being emblematic of all the cases on January 6th as representing democracy's basic principles being fought over violently instead of being resolved in the way that traditionally Americans have always thought they should be.
And I can't let this story go. I mentioned it on air a couple of days ago. I'm going to bring it up with you. And the amazing story out of Russia, and it just keeps getting wilder and wilder. The Russian oil chief died after he fell from a window.
Yes. some official Russian sources, when first announcing the death, didn't mention the cause of death, saying that he'd been ill in hospital. Well, that's possibly true. But TASS, even, long-standing Russian press agency, once upon a time the official voice of the Soviet Communist Party, did actually admit and actually made no comment on it, but said that, yeah, this hospital patient died by falling out of a window. in charge of Lukoil, the big Russian energy company, and the big Russian energy company, which was at pains to oppose the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So what are we to make of this? I think you draw the obvious conclusions, I think. It's very hard. On any kind of reporting on Russia now is difficult. Remember, since February, it's been a criminal offense to even describe what Russia is doing in Ukraine as a war. It's supposed to be a limited military operation. So journalists can, take their own future in their hands if they try and report fully and honestly and thoroughly on developments inside Russia now. So I suspect it's going to be some time before we discover the real truth about this story, but it certainly doesn't look good. Along with some other signs, they're hard to give full weight to or accurate weight to, but dissent in Russia about the war is clearly there. Gauging its strength is a difficult exercise, but it's definitely there. And here we may have a case of dissent bringing down upon itself the terrible wrath of Putin's autocracy. I venture that as a suggestion. Excuse me, I keep doing this. I do apologize. The fact that a horrible death like this can punctuate what in another society would be an argument about the rights and wrongs of a leader's decision to go to war is a statement upon the appalling degeneracy of Russian politics since Putin took over in 2000.
Well, it's a somber way to wrap up the Media Beat, but David, we'll speak to you next week from the media capital of New York City.
Yes, I'll be back there, and we'll be talking once more about the media world.
All right, David, have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you next week.
Do that.
David Tarachuk with the Media Beat.